We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. And I let it play out, Charge, because its triumphant return deserved its own moment in the sun. I can tell you the response was overwhelming. You cannot kill this song. Not now.
Really?
Not ever! Paul Charchian joins us, as he does every week almost, on the ZABEcast. We appreciate his time. I appreciate even more the fact that when I ask him, hey, how about Tuesday, he's got plans. He's like, nah, can't do it here, can't do it there. You're not just sitting out there in Utah counting your money. I like that. Busy.
No. In fact, I'm out here spending money. I'm finally going to break down. My neighbors have shamed me into buying a side-by-side. They're like, everybody in the neighborhood has one. Everybody's got one. What are you doing? You're going to love it. You move to Utah to be outside, to get to all the places that you can't get by car. You got to get it. You got to go buy
you gotta
a side-by-side.
Do it. Side.
So now, side? Yeah, so now I'm in the side-by-side market.
Okay. Side-by-side is what? An ATV with a sidecar for your woman?
No, but I like the sound of that. Like those Nazis had the motorcycles with the
sidecars.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, not, you know, it is not that. That is, if you think of an ATV is where you are riding external to the bike. You're riding on the bike with the four
correct.
Wheelers.
That's right.
An ATV, right? Right. The side-by-side is the enclosed roll bar inside steering wheel. I don't know. I'm not positive how to describe it. But I was calling it an ATV, and people are like, no, it's not an ATV.
So
it's a side-by-side.
It's a dune buggy.
Like a dune, yeah, like a dune buggy.
So it's smaller than a car, larger than a go-kart, and with a protective cage for when you roll it off a cliff.
That's right, and a roof, and in my case, and a windshield. It'll be street legal because I want to be able to drive it, 8 miles or something cool.
It's like golf cart that you can take off-road, wherever it's permitted up there. There's, I'm sure, a lot of national parks where they don't allow the kind of redneckery yeehawing that you would do in a, quote, side-by-side.
Side-by-side. Now, these things go 80 miles an hour, say. I mean, this is...
I know.
You have a golf cart. I mean, we're talking, this thing is... People go out on the sand dunes nearby, and they're out racing at 60, 70 miles an hour on the sand.
So,
which, by the way, I would think it'd be pretty cool.
So what does a side-by-side run?
Boy, that's a complicated question. So your entry level for a two-seater runs about $15,000.
Okay.
If you want a two-cylinder, like, 70 horsepower.
A little girly man side by side. Girly, look at you. You're going slow. You're so weak. You're not manly.
You're puttering through your trail, your outdoor trails. Then at the high end that we've seen within, reasonable limits is about $60,000.
Oh, God.
I know, right? Jesus.
Brand new Lexus LS goes for $60K.
Yes.
Jesus.
I know.
God.
I know. You can get it. You can get it. You get a brand new Tesla with self-driving for $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not spending anywhere near that. I am not spending anywhere near that kind of money, but people do.
Okay.
And, you know, it's people who are racing it and they, you know, they want the best. So money doesn't matter, whatever. Yes.
Why don't you tell your neighbors, I don't need a side-by-side. You got a side-by-side. when the mood strikes, we'll all go side-by-siding. I don't know how you say it. And I'll jump in yours.
Well, so here's the thing. The neighbors do it together, right? So they go like, hey, there's seven neighbors. We're all going to go out in our side-by-sides. And do you want to be a part of it? Well, no, I don't have a side.
And do they all have their woman with them in the passenger side?
Yeah, mostly, yes.
Okay.
So
you couldn't jump in as a dude in the side seat.
Well,
that'd be gay adjacent.
Some cases, yes, because they're, yeah.
Gay adjacent, not that there's anything wrong with it, oh, by the way, but it'd be like weird. Oh, we're two dudes in a side-by-side. Great.
No, I've done that. I've done that a couple of times, and none of the times it's happened has it involved any penetration.
Okay. Funny you should mention sidecars, because I wonder, are you aware of the legend of the Jerky Boys and the Crank Calls tape? That was
I remember
the
show. Yeah, I watched a few of those.
The show.
Funny, honestly. Okay. And Crank Yankers was pretty good, too.
Yes, I wanted to know if I could speak a bit on an accident that I've had.
Can you hear this?
About 2 weeks ago.
What type of accident?
You can't hear this?
It was a motorbike.
Who was on the bike? You?
Well, just...
All right, hold on a second. Let me pipe it in. This is where he calls up asking about a lawyer so he can sue somebody because he was an accident in a sidecar. This is a classic Jerky Boys.
Me, right.
What happened?
I had a sidecar on it. You know those things?
Right.
And I was speeding all over my neighborhood.
Right.
Up and down and speeding all over.
Speeding charts.
And I was drinking and I lost control of the bike.
Right.
And I was skidded off and slammed a curb in a pole and into some people.
Right.
And, you know, nobody's hurt extremely bad, but a few breaks and things.
So what are you looking to do?
I want to look for some consultation what I should do here.
What?
Because they probably have lawsuits against me.
I would expect so, yeah.
Right. I had to give my insurance papers, and I didn't have a license.
Did you have insurance?
Yeah, but it was through a friend.
will you be covered?
I don't know.
Well, the insurance company will appoint a lawyer for you if you get sued. But when you get sued, you may be hiding on what your policy is. When you get sued above your policy, if you have a policy, then you're going to have to contact a lawyer.
Right.
I don't handle cases like that.
Right. But is it possible in any way then to sue you people?
Sue who?
You. I'm asking you for help.
Sue who? Me?
Yes.
Why do you want to sue me?
Well, I'm trying to explain. I had a terrible accident.
What's that got to do with me?
Well, I'm asking you for help, and maybe I could sue for punitive damages that you're giving me.
I'm giving you?
Yes.
Me?
Yes.
What'd I do to you?
Well, punitive damages.
Punitive damages.
I'm a lawyer. What did I do to you?
The sidecar smashed into a pole and everything. I'm trying to explain this to you.
Well, you want to sue me?
Well, why not?
Me?
Sue everybody.
Sue everybody.
Sir, I can't help you.
Hello?
Yes?
The people that you work with and handle, I probably will sue them, too, because I'm not getting...
Who do I handle? Who do I know what you're talking about?
Well, I had a terrible accident, sir.
Yo, and who are my clients?
I'm sorry. I'm all upset about this. I'm sorry. You can't help me then?
No.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Absolute classic. Yeah. Sidecar. Okay. Let's get to the news, Charge. I feel like
hold on a second. Before we move on from this.
Yeah.
It's really sad that today's youth have no idea what crank calling even means. Crank calling died with caller ID and cell phones. But I burned many an afternoon on crank calling.
No way.
Kid.
You were a legendary crank caller, huh?
I was a crank caller.
Oh.
We had my friends and I would devise stupid bits that we would do on the phone, where we would ask people dumb questions and, you know, dumb scenarios. Not as good as crank yankers, but we did it as kids. Kids today have no idea about the crank call or that it would even be a thing. I mean, good. I was the subject of many crank calls growing up. You know, you'd answer the phone and there'd be just, you know, some moron on the other end who's saying something dumb and you just moved on, right? And you either laughed it off or whatever. The kids don't have any idea about the crank call.
Good, clean fun of kids harassing adults, gently harassing them, using the telephone, which was a serious communication instrument back when we were growing up. You did not mess around with the telephone. There were house rules about the telephone. You couldn't, like, bring the telephone into your room. It was in one place in the house, usually in the kitchen.
Oh, no privacy whatsoever. There was no private calls in our house. And most houses were that way.
Right.
You know, my parents had a phone in their bedroom. We had one downstairs in the downstairs living room, and we had one in the kitchen. That was it. Your privacy was wherever the cord would reach and however low you could whisper. That was it. Do you know how hard it was to coordinate buying a six-pack of beer when you were 18 years old and who was going to get the beer and how they were going to get it and who had a buddy that was of age?
Who is your best friend? What was his name?
My best friend?
Yeah, just give me
Matt Lyon.
Matt Lyon.
Matt Lyon.
Here, I'm going to be you. Hey, Matt, it's Paul. Hey, that thing we were talking about, do you think we could do that today? Hold on. Shh, my mom's coming. Yeah, no. No, yeah, getting donuts would be cool, Matt. Yeah, let's go do that. Okay. How many donuts? 12? Okay, cool. All right, goodbye. Click. Yeah, Mom, just going to get some donuts with Matt.
Donuts. Yeah, this is just like the Epstein. It's just like the Epstein files.
Oh, God.
Use pizza, right? This is just like pizza in the Epstein files. It was donuts for my six-pack of warm Blatt's Light.
So you've landed us on the Epstein files, and I've yet to talk about this on the podcast yet, and that is the sports entanglements of the Epstein files, including Steve Tisch, the reclusive, you never really see him, half-owner of the New York Giants, who apparently, according to the emails they uncovered, and it wasn't directly from his email account, it was like a copy of what Epstein sent to Tisch, I guess. It was him basically admitting to getting all horny for underage Russian girls as prostitutes, and that Epstein was saying, okay, well, they're a little freaked out by the age difference. One of them was crying, and she wanted to go home, but we calmed her down and talked her out of it. That's some dark, disgusting shit when you really get down to it. And of course, Tisch just came out and put out a statement. It's like, yeah, me and Epstein talked about a lot of things, including women, but that's it. I'm not commenting any further. Sort of a, oh yeah? What else you got? Prove it kind of situation. And you know the league, Charch, is not going to move on Big Blue. Not in a million years.
Not likely. I don't think any of the owners want those kinds of rocks being overturned. Right.
No.
And by the way, the Commanders owner, Josh Harris, is mentioned frequently.
He is, although his communications with Epstein were far more exonerating. The narrative on him was that he was trying to get Epstein out of their business. Like, don't talk to this guy. This guy is a complete tool. We want nothing to do with this guy.
Good.
Right, right. The tweets off of this, though, are pretty funny. Somebody tweeted, one thing I take away from the Epstein email dump is, I got to network better. And that is true. This fucker, he absolutely knew everybody and had a way in with everybody. Now, supplying Russian prostitutes underage sometimes and then trafficking them to his island, that was also, you know, not a bad trick, if you will, to getting access to the world's most powerful. But yeah, I mean, it's just wild. How much of it have you read?
Well, I've read all million pages of it so far.
Okay, not
how I spent my time. No, just whatever's popped up on social media.
Okay,
the Russian prostitute thing. I want to mention to you is this, and I know you know about the Bill Gates thing, and all of our listeners probably do as well. That Bill Gates, in the emails, was said to have given his wife an STD and then was going to try to slip antibiotics into her food and drinks when she did not know. Here's the thing about the Russian prostitutes through Epstein. He knew they had STDs. He purposely set them up with clients who had STDs because then he's got more on you.
Was that confirmed?
No, this is my theory.
Oh, this is a charged theory. By the way, not
this
a bad
is a charge patented theory.
Not a bad theory. However, I might add,
now,
getting a Russian prostitute with something, an STD, it's like, you know, a 1 in 2 chance. It's a coin flip.
That's right. It was going to happen anyway.
Right.
But I think that was, they intentionally gave these guys STDs because then they got more on them. And that was the whole point of this, was all about leverage, right? To make these, give these guys, get these guys in, compromise these powerful people. So then they can, then they'll do whatever you need them to do.
Amen to that. Now, apparently Melinda Gates spoke on a podcast recently after this revelation came out. And again, there was no firm email from Gates to Epstein, but Epstein was sort of copying himself on what he had said, I guess, to Gates. So again, I'm not trying to defend Gates. I'm 99.9% sure it happened exactly as it's chronicled, because Bill Gates is a scumbag, and that's pretty clear at this point. But it's just crazy that these guys who should know better are fucking emailing stuff. Like, it's email.
Email.
E
regular
stands for
email.
E stands for evidence, you dipshits. Searchable. Subpoenaable. That's the E in email, you morons. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to think I'd have done it better. My brother met twice with Bill Gates privately.
Your brother being in the video game space.
Yep, he worked for Xbox. I'm going to just, this will take 30 seconds, but I'll tell you the situations. Number one was when the very first Xbox came out that was just called Xbox, and it was mostly a flop, but hackers, it was hackable. But the hackers had turned it into a far better product than Microsoft's internal team did. So my brother brought his fully hacked and fully modded Xbox to Bill Gates to show him what all the hackers had done to make it great.
No way. So he sat down with the chief nerd.
He did. And then he met with him one other time when the PlayStation, the PSP, the handheld, the original Sony handheld came out.
You made me get one of those, by the way. Me and Scott got those at your urging. And it was fun for about an hour. And then I was like, oh,
that's you. That's a you problem. That is not a PSP problem, by the way. It came out in Japan first, and I'm such an Uber nerd. I ordered it directly from Japan, and I sent my brother one as a surprise, and he got it.
Of
and so he was one of the very first people in America to have one. And this was Sony's first handheld, so he brought it over to Bill Gates. He showed it to Bill Gates so he could see what Sony's handheld gaming system looked like.
Yeah.
So he met him twice.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So here's the Melinda Gates on this podcast with, who's this woman? Wildcard is the name of the podcast. I'm going to play it for you right here. She didn't really confirm that it was necessarily true, but she also didn't say, no, that wasn't the case. And remember, Bill Gates is the guy that wanted to force everyone on the planet to get not just one vaccine that turned out to be a complete dud that did a lot of harm to a lot of people, but he would love to vaccinate all kinds of people about all kinds of things, because that's the kind of sick fuck he is. And the fact that he has given any kind of deference as any kind of expert on infectious diseases blows my mind. He's a computer fucking nerd. And he made a shitty operating system that still is not very good today. I saw a lot of people bitching about the latest Windows stuff and how it's all falling apart.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Right. Man. Anyway, so here's
Sell short, Microsoft. Go ahead.
Here's Melinda Gates.
The emails in the files suggest that Bill Gates had additional affairs and that he tried to get medication to treat a sexually transmitted infection, and that he was going to give you the medicine without you knowing. His representative has said all of this is false. It is not on you to have to respond to the details of that alleged behavior.
But was it true? Was it true? Was it true?
I wonder what your dominant emotion is when you read these news articles.
What's your dominant emotion? I was delighted.
What does that mean?
I was so glad. I want everyone to know about this. I want everyone to know that I might be rolling around with a bunch of Russian STDs and Russian gonorrhea clattering around in my body.
Sad. Just unbelievable sadness. Unbelievable sadness, right?
Yeah.
And again, I'm able to take my own sadness and look at those young girls and say, my God, how did that happen to those girls, right? And so for me, it's just sadness for, you know, I left my marriage. I had to leave my marriage. I wanted to leave my marriage. I had to leave I felt I needed to eventually leave the foundation. So it's just sad. That's the truth, right? And it's kind of like, at least for me, I've been able to move on in life.
Yeah, move on. Do you know how much she got in the divorce?
Okay, let me guess. I need the dun 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 dun.
You want some game show music?
A little game show background would be great. While I ponder the, he had to be worth at the time of the divorce. Let's just say he was worth probably over $1 billion. Then they've been divorced probably 10 years. I'm going to say she got $300 million.
$300 million.
It's a lot.
I mean,
and he probably had a really good lawyer that worked up his prenup. Maybe that's a little high.
You think it's a little bit high?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to stick to my math. 300 million.
The real answer is $8 billion.
Oh my God. Pretty good for an administrative assistant.
$8 billion in stock to her private foundation, Pivotal Philanthropies. The exact total settlement was confidential, but we do know from recent reports, says the internet, that $8 billion in stock was sent over.
That's crazy. And yet, she should sell that Microsoft stock now, by the way. Get out now.
Right. Yeah. And yet Bill Gates wakes up in the morning, puts on a suit or puts on a coat and a tie and whatever, and he goes around the world being Bill Gates still, and he shows up and he gets applauded places and he speaks at places, and he's got to feel pretty good about himself somehow. He figures out a way to do so. That's what blows me away, Charge, how people like this just keep on plowing through. Like, yeah, okay.
Act like nothing happened and see if it goes away.
Right.
And a lot of times it does. There seems like there's a lot of machinery to make sure it does go away.
Well,
it does not hit headlines and move on.
The Steve Tisch statement was, we had a brief association where we exchanged emails, meaning him and Epstein, about adult women. And in addition, we discussed movies, philanthropy, and investments. I did not take him up on any of his invitations and never went to his island. As we all know now, he was a terrible person and someone I deeply regret associating with. Russell Wilson was named in the emails about wanting to buy a plane and somehow got entangled with Epstein. Yeah. I think the more funny, and of course, Russell Wilson tweeted, nope, 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 this is totally out of context. I was trying to go through some broker, third party, blah, blah, blah. The thing I'm laughing at is, you dumb fuck, to buying a plane. I know you're making a ton of money as an NFL player. This is how you guys go broke. Scottie Pippen once bought a plane himself and then quickly went broke because he thought he was going to save money by owning a Gulfstream.
Only a plane. Right. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. Unless somehow flying makes you the money. But for Scottie Pippen in retirement, flying did not, you know, flying did not make him money.
Sure.
So that was not going to work out for him.
All right. I want to get to one Super Bowl related thing. And then
by the way, Tisch did not deny that Russian women may have been sent to his hotel. All he said is he didn't go to the island.
Yeah.
You know, I'm guessing Epstein could have brought the island to you no matter where you were, if he thought it was important enough and you paid enough.
Of course. Yeah. And the flight logs have been either kept under wraps or destroyed. There's been fakes that have gone out as well. It's just a huge mess. This guy, though, knew everybody, and he had the goods on a lot of fucking people. And this,
that's what it was all about.
And this is not like, there was that one time one rich guy got with a bunch of other rich guys and delivered them women for sex. This happens
right
all the time. We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. All right, let's get to a Super Bowl thing. There is a lot of talk. News came out Tuesday that Kraft will not make the Hall of Fame, just like Belichick's going to have to wait at least another year. Kraft may never make it for reasons that are hard to even kind of explain, I guess. But I want to put a quarter in the charts jukebox about the Hall of Fame in general, because I don't know if I've let you roam on that.
You and I talked about Belichick extensively last time. We didn't talk about Kraft. I feel like owners shouldn't even be in the Hall of Fame. What is it? What kind of weird self-congratulatory move is this? You know, I don't get it. What did an owner do to propel the game forward beyond what I don't see why owners are in at all, period. I don't know what any owner has ever done other than maybe like Paul Brown. You know, what did these people do to propel the game forward? And I don't feel like they got really rich.
Sure.
They made a bunch of money on their investments, but is the game better because Robert Kraft owned the Patriots and not Jim Schwartz? No, I mean, I don't think so. I don't see it that way. I don't feel like owners should be in at all.
I would tend to agree that the Hall of Fame should say, look, we're not going to, just because you made a lot of money for the league, we're not going to put you in because of that. You can say, well, it's good for the league. Jerry Jones is in large part because he pushed the boundaries of the marketing angle, cutting his own deal with Pepsi, cutting his own deal with, I think, AT&T. And, you know, that's great for business. It's not the pro business Hall of Fame. It's pro football Hall of Fame. So, yeah. Right. So there's that element to it. But then there's this. The play the last time the Patriots and the Seahawks met in the Super Bowl that is one of the all-time iconic plays in Super Bowl history is of the Malcolm Butler interception at the goal line. Here is a five-minute piece. I'm not going to play all of it for you right now, but we'll play a snippet or two. A five-minute piece from NFL Films about what went into that play, basically, because the Patriots were kind of ready for it, and they were lucky that Butler did exactly what he needed to do and that Malcolm Browner jammed the other receiver hard enough to make that play possible.
About the timeout, I knew they only had one timeout left. And when I looked over there, I don't know, something just didn't look right.
By the way, this is the most cleaned up and showered Bill Belichick I've seen in a long time. Am I right about that?
For him right there.
It's like, yeah, that shirt is not all ratty. The hair is nice and cut.
And when
shaved.
I looked over there, I don't know, something just didn't look right. They started on, and they started off, and now...
Hey, you're out.
However many seconds had gone by, and I'm thinking, all right, I'm not going to take them off the hook here by taking the timeout. If they want to use it, let them use it. And Matt said, you know, do you want the timeout?
You want to call the timeout? You don't want to call the timeout? It was a very lonely moment for me because he wouldn't talk to me. He wouldn't even look at me. He was just kind of staring across the field. You know, the clock is running.
People were saying stuff up in the box, asking, were we going to take a timeout? I'd say, Bill, they're wondering about a timeout. He said, yeah, I got it. And he just, and you could see it when you watch the rewind or whatever. You could see Bill doing that, which is amazing. That's, again, the genius. He said, yep, I got it. Like we were in the meeting room right now.
I said, no, just play goal line.
They're going goal line.
We have different goal line.
So they explain the whole goal line package. I'm going to fast forward to the key part of it, and that is their longtime assistant coach, Ernie.
They might run against us or...
Forget Ernie's last
name. he had seen from a previous game.
We put all these plays on
Ernie
cards.
Adams.
So our scout team offense, they can just come up. We'll show them this card. You're going to win or lose games at practice. I mean, there is no such thing as being a game day player. You see situations
like
come up on the practice field. You've worked on it. You know what it takes. When it comes up in the game, because you're trained, you're seasoned, you've seen it, you react to make the play.
It's good stuff that they have all the practice footage as well from the Super Bowl on that.
Yes, which is great.
So here was the play, obviously.
Coming.
You know, that was so close to being pass interference because it was
very
just
close.
Bang, bang like that. But it really was dramatic because, like in Greek tragedies, the concept of deus ex machina, where the gods, deus, would come down like a machine and pluck the hero out of impending doom as sort of a plot. Not a twist, but sort of a regular plot theme of Greek drama. The deus ex machina, plucking him out. To go from nearly certain death on, was it second and goal from the two, down up four with less than a minute to go, to an interception, which you would have never guessed in that moment. Hard to believe.
Well, and, you know, the context, as you know, and most of our listeners will remember, of course, is Marshawn Lynch was unstoppable.
Yes.
He just plowing Patriots that entire drive down the field. They had no answer. They're obviously winded. It's the end of the game. The Patriots are dying, and you're at the 2-yard line, and all you had to do was give the ball to Marshawn Lynch and let him go win the Super Bowl.
In theory. Guys do get stopped every now and then. Tackles, miss blocks every now and then.
The Patriots didn't have it. The Patriots did not have it at that point. I don't think they had it in them. We'll never know. But
now there is a counter narrative to this being Belichick's greatest moment, because a lot of people are saying, you know, the Hall of Fame committee should just watch this 5-minute piece on how brilliant it was that Belichick let the disorganized Seahawks scramble and throw a shitty pass and a bad play that cost him the Super Bowl. That he was calm in the moment. There are people that say, no. They end up getting lined up exactly like they wanted to. They were at the line of scrimmage with 10 seconds left on the play clock, and they snapped it with 5 seconds on the play clock. So there's people that say, look, it's great that Butler intercepted it, but you should have left Brady another 40 seconds by calling a timeout to try to come back and win the game. What was also interesting is that Butler intercepted it, got knocked by the collision with Curse back into the end zone, and then tried to come out again. He got tackled at the 2, and it was a real dicey situation where the Patriots had to run a couple plays because I believe the Seahawks had timeouts. And I forget if they punted away after that or not, but the game was not fully over even after the pick.
No, it was a clean interception, but the player they were throwing to, Curse, whoever, was right there. And that was very close as well. There was a little bit more drama to that entire play.
Right.
And I think we all realized in real time what was happening. But that's top five all time Super Bowl moment. If you were to distill any one play, top five plays of all time, I think that's got to be one, right?
We're coming up on our 60th Super Bowl. So top five is a very hard, it's very high shelf, very narrow shelf, very high shelf to get on. And when you're talking about greatest plays, some of them have great nostalgia for certain fan bases because of the moment. Like for me, every Redskin fan has a framed photo of John Riggins bowling over Don McNeil, poor Don McNeil of the Dolphins on 4th and 1 as he grasps at his jersey, a jersey that Riggo is auctioning off this week. It actually has the mud and grass stains from the game on it.
Wow.
Oh, it's a wow kind of a thing for sure.
What do you think it'll sell for?
couple hundred thousand, I believe. Which is pretty damn impressive. And it means also that Riggo needs the money. But that said, there are certain favorite plays. There are certain artistic plays. The play of Lynn Swann as he falls down and tips the ball up to himself and then catches it, Super Bowl VII or whatever it was. That's one of the iconic NFL films highlight plays. Was it really a great play? Not really, right?
I would think the Eli Manning to Tyree, what was his name?
David Tyree, the helmet catch.
David Tyree, helmet catch.
Right.
That's got to be in the conversation.
That's
right?
Probably close because it involved two ends of a miracle. One was Eli was getting pawed at like a guy who had fallen into a lion enclosure at the zoo and they were ripping at his jersey and he's like ducking and he gets out from certain death. The referee made sure that the crew chief, who I think was Greer, he did not call in the grasp, which he could have. And it was a great no call to not quick whistle it. And then after he escapes that play, he then throws it and Tyree somehow skewers it to his helmet. And it is just inches from hitting the ground, which... Imagine in today's instant replay world, because I don't think they had replay back then. Imagine if you had to review that, if the tip of the ball had doink, touched the ground.
Grazed the ground, yes.
Even though it was securely squished to his helmet. How do you define possession then? Good?
Oh, what a disaster.
Freaking luck, right?
No kidding.
All right, now we've covered all the important stuff. Let's get to the fun stuff. There's a story I sent you that when we tell it to you, you'd say, get out of here. But it's true. Did you know that the Italian economy is in part held up by cheese-backed securities? That's right, cheese. In northern Italy, Credito Emiliano treats cheese like gold. The bank currently holds 430,000 wheels of Parmesan that are worth an estimated $200 million.
Oh, man. That's a lot of cheddar, Zabe.
Well, it's Parmesan. It's not cheddar. But yes.
You get the idea.
Real Parmesan takes
granted,
2 to 3.
That's
Real Parmesan takes 2 to 3 years to get ready. It leaves farmers with millions of dollars in premature products that they can't sell while still needing to pay for cows, bills, workers, and more. By using young cheese as a security for a loan, farmers get cash immediately, and the bank provides up to 80% of the value up front so these businesses stay running. How great is it that something like delicious, genuine Italian Parmesan cheese in a giant wheel is so well-loved that there's never any doubt that it'll still be loved and worth a shit ton of money 5, 10, 15 years from now?
I think it's awesome that they do this for farmers. And it's good collateral. I mean, if it's good, if the cheese is good cheese, and I'm sure they inspect the cheese and, I don't know, for purity or whatever, if it's good cheese that needs to age 3 years, the farmers get paid immediately. They've got it collateralized against the cheese, and it's fantastic. Now, the entire holdings of this Italian cheese scheme at $200 million is only worth 1/32nd of a Belinda Gates.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's
right. Today we have an 80-pound wheel.
Have you ever seen pasta made inside of a cheese wheel?
What?
Oh.
What do you mean inside of a cheese wheel? How do you make pasta inside a cheese wheel? What does that even mean?
I'm going to show it to you right now. Look at this.
Spin that around to break apart that cheese and then bring it back again. Now I'll spin my cheese around to the other side.
Here, I'll skip to
you. You can probably start to see some of these flames of the fire, which is kind of faint, but still definitely there. What it's allowing me to do is sort of make a cheese sauce out of this before we even add any of the pasta for that. And because it's so hot in there, the cheese is starting to melt in the base of my wheel. Now that my eyes are tearing up again and crying a little bit because of all that alcohol that's just come off, we have this really warm cheese paste at the base that we can now use to make the rest of our pasta. We'll pour in that pasta, which of course we need to break apart a little bit here. Then we'll come in with that thick cream sauce, letting it go all over
They make creamy, cheesy pasta inside a $2,500 cheese bowl.
This is one of the most beautiful, coolest, most rustic things I have ever seen in the kitchen. And I have cooked a lot.
I mean, look at that.
That's gorgeous. Jeez, I'd have sex with that. That's astounding. Zabe, that's, you know, they hollow out the inside of the wheel and then they pour in the pasta and it looks like Alfredo sauce all through it. And then they roll it around inside.
Oh, yeah.
The inside of the wheel.
I'm so hoping that they
get all the cheese in there.
I'm hoping they repurpose what's left of the cheese wheel. They don't just throw it away because that's a lot of cheese still left over. You mentioned I'd have sex with that. Question. Would you let your WNBA girlfriend pose for Playboy?
Well, I don't think Playboy would take a WNBA player, but yeah, probably.
Here's Cameron Brink. You ever seen Cam Brink? She's a tall drink of water, and she's not too shabby. Not much in the front court, if you know what I'm saying, but she's a lean, long, athletic gal.
One of the WNBA stars just came out and did Playboy. Playboy has, quote unquote, like changed their like kind of format. They're trying to be more tasteful. It's less like, you know, more tasteful. In your face. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? You've modeled everywhere. Was that something that you would even consider?
Yeah, maybe. I just want to shout out Kaiser, though, because she's a good friend of mine, and she's going through a really tough recovery right now, but I know she's going to kill it. So shout out to my girl Kaiser. She looked absolutely beautiful. So I support absolutely anything that she does.
Well, look, you know, so it sounds like it's not a no. It's not a no.
We'll see. Maybe. Hey. If my fiance approves.
Oh, wait a minute. Is she married to, maybe she's gay. I might have misread this. Who's Kaiser?
In the NBA, Zabe, in the WNBA, that's impossible.
What?
The topic of Playboy came up recently for me.
But okay, let me ask. No. It's she's engaged to Ben Felter, a former Stanford rowing team member. So she is, yes, she's hetero, but either way is fine by me. So you were going to say.
You'll remember when Playboy was a big deal. It was a cultural touchstone. There were people that were either on their way up or on their way down that appeared in Playboy of their careers. And it was a big deal. I'm rewatching Mad Men and yearning for the days when Office Life was a bunch of guys pointing at the secretaries, drinking whiskey on the job. And I recalled that one time as a kid, I visited, this probably like 1980, I visited my dad at his office, corporate job at Control Data. And the guy that had a desk next to him had a stack of Playboys on the desk in the workplace.
Of course.
In the workplace, there was a stack of Playboys. It was a different time, Zabe. That was 1980.
In the big offices, they had sideboards full of whiskey at the office.
Yes.
And that's where they would go to retreat during lunch to have a whiskey and talk about how the men were going to run the world. But it was a very patriarchal, misogynistic, and awful place for women to work.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
100%. One more non-sports real quick. The Walter White House in Albuquerque, New Mexico from Breaking Bad is now up for sale for $400,000. That sounds about right. It's a simple 3-bedroom ranch with a tiny pool in the back. It had previously been listed, though, for $4 million.
Wow. Well, okay.
Who in their right mind would pay $4 million just to go, hey, remember when the pizza was on the roof over the garage? That was great, right? Hey, remember the time that Hank was in the back by the pool and they were getting drunk together with his son? Yeah, here's the pool. Yeah, okay.
I'm surprised there's a part of me that feels like it could have sold for $4 million. I don't blame them for listing it for that because it could have happened.
I guess you got to shoot your shot, right? But from going from $4 million to $400,000,
that seems like a bit much.
Why don't you list it for 1.2, and then when somebody offers you 8, and you think, oh man, I can't get rid of this for 8, man. I mean, come on, this is an iconic house here. then you laugh when you finally sell it for twice of what it's worth. Because once you buy the house, you have to live in Albuquerque. No offense to those of my friends who live in Albuquerque. And I do have
people
friends.
I've met that live in Albuquerque don't like Albuquerque. They're what? Like, don't move here.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you would know the West better than me. Shout out Joe, who runs the ESPN station in Albuquerque. I love you, and I know that you love Albuquerque, and it is indeed the land of enchantment. And it's not full of tweakers and meth cookers like the TV show Portway. All right, I got to give a shout out to Charge, who has enrolled us in a weekly pick'em pool in the PGA Tour. And Charge is becoming a newfound golfer and golf enthusiast, and he loves to dig in on the analytics of picking players each week. It's Charge's deal. I'm just a ride along. He comes up with a couple ideas. The first couple weeks, I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Go with it. Yeah, that's fine. Go with it. This past week, though, at the Farmers was the first time I stuck my nose in and vetoed you on a pick. Yes. It was Ludvig Åberg, who had a great track record at Torrey, but had pulled out of a tournament 2 weeks before with a, quote, illness. And I mockingly said, sniffles. I said, you can't trust a guy that's got the sniffles. We're not picking him. And you were kind of like, yeah, but all the metrics are great. He's a long driver. He's straight. And I go, no. Can't trust the guy with sniffles. So I said, let's take Siwoo Kim. And Siwoo finished, I think, T3 with a nice check. Second. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well so, done, Zane.
So our three picks this year have put us in what place in this pool?
We are second place out of 50 right now. And we need to make our waste management selection, which we have not yet done. We've got to figure out you can only use any one player one time, and you only get one player each week. So you can't just do Scottie Scheffler. It may be obvious, and you got to pick your spots. So, you know, this is part of the fun is trying to figure out for such a simple game. Is this the week that Wyndham Clark is going to catch fire and I can, or even just do okay. And I can
fuck
use him here.
Wyndham Clark
save somebody
to the
somebody
moon.
Else.
I will not allow you to pick that cock this year. He's the biggest. You know Wyndham Clark's story, right?
No, I don't know his story. So, I picked him randomly.
Wyndham Clark was just sort of an average tour player, good player, but, you know, nondescript guy. Got hot 1 year, about 3 years ago now, two years ago, won the U.S. Open out at LACC, and then started to act like he was hot shit. And then when his game fell off, because golf is impossible and everyone's games fall off, he started being a dick and he started throwing clubs that almost hit volunteers at the PGA Championship in Charlotte. Yep, you can look that up. And then he demolished the locker room, or not demolished, but he demolished his locker at Oakmont Country Club at the U.S. Open and had to apologize for it. Has reportedly been banned for life from there. And he said things along the way that have just made you roll your eyes going, this Todd. So, no, I will not let you pick Wyndham Clark at all. Ever.
All right.
I don't care. Tony, now, the thing is...
Tony Finau interest you at all?
For a long time, a lot of golf nerds were like, this is the year that Finau wins a major. Right. No, this is the year Finau wins a major. No,
10
this
years
is the...
later.
Right. I wouldn't be opposed to it. The betting favorite for the waste management is Scottie Scheffler because he's the best player in the world. And his odds are like plus 220, where the next closest is plus 1400 or something.
Yeah, crazy.
But we're in a pool, so we don't get the bonus of the long odds that some people who are wagering do. We just want to try to cash the best check. And because the pool only lasts how many weeks? 43 weeks?
It goes through, I think, the PGA.
Okay, whatever the number is. When we started out, I said, remember, Church, there's like 150 guys on tour that could win any week. They're all fucking good. But we only have to use 43. So don't be afraid to use names whenever. I wouldn't be opposed to using Scheffler here, even though it's such a duh kind of a pick.
Well, you can't do it here because the purse is too small. It's a $9 million purse, and we get money. We get however much our player makes. We need to save Scheffler for a $20 million purse. We can't use Scheffler at a
You're
$9
right.
million purse.
You're right. That's probably the smarter play. Okay. So who do you like, Sam Burns? You asked Gronk, who do you like? And Gronk said Sam Burns.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Sam Burns it is. Let's keep it rolling. Listen to this music, Charge. Zabe Vegas 2026 is on. It's Sweet 16 weekend. We're going to meet at the MGM Grand, play a Papa Shot tournament. 64 bids only, $64 to be part of our party. We're going to go to the Vegas Sign for a photo. We're going to Mandalay Bay that night, to the nightclub up top. It's going to be a great time, meet and greet. Armin Sarian is definitely coming. He's excited for it.
Oh, good.
Mr. X is definitely coming. He's excited for it. Brian Butch, my former morning show co-host, is reportedly coming, but it depends on the Badgers basketball team not making the Sweet 16, so that could be a bit dicey. He could also just flake on me. I don't know how reliable he is. And then one Paul Charchian has expressed a curious interest in possibly coming. Do we have an update on that?
I'm moving my odds from 40% up to 50% this week. We're working on it.
Okay, we'll take it. We'll take the move in the positive direction. And
we're heading the right direction.
Okay, if you can come, that'll be great. If you can't, another time. But if you want to be part of this, email me, zabe@yahoo.com. I'll send you all the details on how to pay, where to pay, and everything else. Charge, good luck on the side-by-side. Any emails on recommendations, send them to me at zabe@yahoo.com. I'll forward them to Charge, just like all the recommendations that they gave you on your camper, right?
Yes, they did well there, and they urged me not to to buy a pickup truck, and I didn't listen, and I ultimately had to buy a pickup truck. So your emailers generally give some good advice.
All right, Charge, good to talk to you, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
See you, buddy. Later, my man. Bye. Viva Las Vegas. Viva. We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.